I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network. This hour, One World Everybody Eats. This is a tax-exempt nonprofit organization that's dedicated to ending world hunger by sharing its Pay What You Can community cafe model with communities all over the world. The values are these: pay what you can, patrons choose their portion size, healthy seasonal foods are served, patrons may volunteer in exchange for a meal, volunteers are used to the greatest extent possible, and the paid staff earns a living wage. We'll have two guests with us during the course of this hour. The founder of One World Everybody Eats will be joining us, and then a little bit later, the executive director of the recently opened Trickle Bee Cafe in the Washington Heights neighborhood here in Milwaukee. It just opened this cafe the day before Thanksgiving, I believe. We'll be welcoming phone calls as we talk about this whole concept, and here's how you reach our conversation. The number is 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're on Twitter at K Dunn Show. Denise Serretta is the founder of One World Everybody Eats. Hello, Denise. Thank you very much for being with us.
Hello, Kathleen. Thank you for inviting me.
Yeah, a great pleasure. So you had, I understand, this epiphany, field of dreams moment in 2003. What happened?
Yes. I had been an acupuncturist, and I really felt in order to grow spiritually, I needed to close my practice. So I did, and I went into this little coffee shop that I had put into the front of the building that I had rented in downtown Salt Lake City. And a couple months into it, I had this big energy come on me, and I sort of heard with my spiritual ears, go to donation, let people price their own food. And I always laugh and say it was a good thing I saw Field of Dreams a couple of times, because when I really had my own, I accepted it. And at that moment, the next person that walked through the door, I was a bit shell-shocked, but I said, no more pricing, just price your own.
Yeah, that's a big step for you to take. And partially you did it because you knew what was going on in the world with this huge number of people. We tend to forget how many, but 1 in 6 Americans being food insecure, that's a huge number.
It is, Kathleen, and I think, and I was really at the initial time one of the people that I'm going to mention. We tend to think the hungry are just possibly the homeless, and really food insecurity, it looks like me, it looks like you, it's, you know, students, people that are just out of work or newly divorced or whatever. And it really has a different face than I think we as a population used to recognize. I think that's changed now.
So you had this coffee house, and you turned it into a small restaurant, and it worked. People came in, paid what they could. Most people paid the amount that it cost to be fed, and then were helping out others, and those who couldn't were volunteering. Everybody was volunteering. It worked.
Yes, it did. Yes, it did. And, you know, I was in Salt Lake City, Utah at the time, and I just would really like to put a shout out to the community of Salt Lake who really proved that it could work, because back then no one was doing this and everybody said it couldn't work and the press was sort of in the eaves waiting for it to fall apart and it didn't. And so I believe it can work in any community, but Salt Lake will always be special, you know, in my heart for those, you know, good old days.
I'm sure. And since then, you have inspired and assisted in the opening of more than, 60 cafes, maybe more than that by now, around the world.
Yes. Yes. Years ago, I would go around to different communities, like, you know, you're about to talk to Christy here, and stay a month or two and help build out the cafe and get it up and going. And I really believed in my heart that to create that little groundswell, and then by generously giving, people would use that as a model. And that's what has really happened. So cafes that have been up and running for a number of years, there's more cafes now, so people can go to those cafes, or cafes that we initially helped are more, are generous with their time. So it's really mushroomed. And we also hold a summit once a year that people can come and network and meet each other and learn.
One of the goals of the organization you started is to have healthy seasonal foods that are served. Does that mean gardens next to the restaurant? Does it mean contracting with farms in the area? What does it mean?
Yes, Kathleen, it means all of the above. A lot of cafes have a community garden that people can also volunteer there to get a hand up to earn meals. And they make partnerships with local farmers. Sometimes it's as simple as if you're at the farmer's market and you don't sell everything, bring it by, or we will definitely buy your seconds at a fair market price because you can't really feel like you can sell them. So we're really dedicated to ending waste and building community, but also being an economic stimulus in the community. So mm-hmm. It's a different twist to a nonprofit. It's more sustainable.
How big a problem is waste?
I think waste is huge in this country. And when I first started, that was really and still is a very important part of the model, is to ending waste. And one of the reasons I think the community cafes do so well is that many of them let the customers choose their own portion, or they start off with smaller portions, knowing that, you know, if you're still hungry, you can always come for more. But what is usually set in front of a customer in a regular restaurant setting is then put in the trash, left on the table. And so we would try to hit the bullseye, give somebody exactly what they wanted, and we had zero waste. And that really helps the bottom line.
So how do you decide when you come in, when somebody comes into one of these restaurants, how do you decide whether, because you also don't want to be stigmatized, I can't afford to pay for this meal.
Right.
How do you keep that from happening?
Right. Different cafes do it in different ways. Our philosophy is we don't believe there's just one cookie cutter way. You have to really, as every community is different. But what tends to happen is you come in, you choose your portions, and then after your meal, on your way out, you would just put some money in a box. So it was all on an honor system. Some cafes do a check at the table, and you just write in the amount that you're paying. So the number one thing is to keep people's dignity, and nobody knows unless somebody wants to share who paid a suggested price, who overpaid or who underpaid.
Mm-hmm.
And the energy is, if you don't feel like you fit into one of those categories, we'd like you to volunteer and help us if you feel, you know, you're not in the ballpark. And with that said, you can learn different trades in the food service industry, so possibly if you're looking for work, we can help facilitate that also.
Mm-hmm. And how many people have to overpay and do overpay to make the whole model work, or do you have to do usually some other forms of fundraising, Denise?
Mm-hmm. Great questions. Typically, we like to say the rule of thumb is that 80% of the patrons coming need to pay a suggested fair price. So, if you want to fudge that with overpay, a little, you know, something there, to help 20% of the people in your community that are volunteering and or underpaying.
Mm-hmm. The other part of this that's fairly important, I would think, is that it's a gathering place. So you have a sense of community, which a lot of people don't have. There are a lot of people who are lonely, who don't have families, who don't have networks, and particularly if you're not doing very well financially due to whatever, you have a place to go where you can talk to people.
Absolutely. And I would say for me, that is the most important thing that is going on in these community cafes. We are serving food. We are, you know, sensitive to food insecurity. But the mentoring and the friendship that is built, because everybody has a place at the table in a community cafe, I think is the most powerful concept that's going on. Because if you truly know somebody and you may know their struggles or whatever it is, I think you, a human being will reach out to another human being. And those are lasting relationships and problems. The ability to solve problems, right. I think, happens right there.
Mm-hmm. Denise Sirita is our guest, and we're talking about something that she started back in 2003, the First Page You Can Community Cafe called One World Cafe in Salt Lake City. A few years later, she was asked to go to Colorado and start another one there. A couple in Denver wanted to replicate her World Cafe model, One World Cafe model. And now there are over 60 such places in this country and also in some other countries. We welcome your phone calls. There is one in Milwaukee, which we will be talking about momentarily. But what do you think of this model? It provides a sense of community. It also provides a source of food for people who don't have enough food. It provides a way for people to learn some skills, perhaps, in the food business. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook is The Kathleen Dunn Show. Tell me more, Denise, about these summits that you have. They started, I believe, in 2010. People get together to talk about what are the issues that all of these cafes are facing.
Right. We hold a summit in a different city every year. We usually try to have one where there is a cafe that we can visit. So people are able to, you know, the people that have opened cafes can network with people who are just starting cafes or thinking about starting cafes, because the whole concept is still new. The people that are throwing their hat in the ring are really still pioneers. And we feel strongly if we can facilitate a place where people can gather. We have guest speakers of different varieties, different interests. And we've been doing it now, I think, for 7 or 8 years. And our incentive there is we really would like the different people to meet each other so they can call each other on the phone and visit each other's cafes and really have a larger support system than they realize.
Mm-hmm. And have many of the cafes been able to survive for a pretty long period of time?
Most have. I think the longest running cafe right now is just celebrated their 10th anniversary in that is same cafe in Denver, Colorado. Some cafes have an average life of maybe 3 or 4 years, and then the visionary moves on or retires or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
We feel it's part of our responsibility to help people gather good business practices, because most people, like myself, when I first started, I was a visionary. This just happened to me, and I had no restaurant experience. And, you know, I was flying by the seat of my pants, and I was undercapitalized. And these are the things we don't recommend that people do now, since we have other models out there that are much better. But that's how it birthed out, and that's, you know, so we really like to support people in their process, but also supply them with the tools they need to be successful.
Mm. That's really something, isn't it? You had no experience in this area, and you just decided, well, I'm going to do this.
Well, Kathleen, it was really a spiritual journey, and on hindsight, I think if I did know, I probably wouldn't have done it. I would have talked myself out of it, like we tend to do with these
right.
with these type of ideas that just come to us.
Right. What's your next idea? What's your current idea?
Well, thanks for asking that. Actually, I do have. When this concept came to me, it was really like everybody sleeps everybody eats, everybody sleeps. And I feel I'm in the position now to really investigate and go further with this everybody sleeps part. And what I mean by that is to really develop some concrete training for people that they can graduate from and actually earn a living wage, because I think poverty and hunger are really hand in hand, and until we really solve that problem, people are always going to be hungry. So by building the community and moving forward with that, and I have some ideas around that, and you know, it's really a little off track of what we're talking about today, but that's what I'm going to be doing next. I guess the other half of the original idea.
Great. Let's go to phone calls for you. Cindy in Middleton. Hi, Cindy.
Hi. I am so encouraged by what you've done and what you're doing. And these are things that I've been thinking about for a long time. I've recently found myself in a unique position where I lost a job and haven't been able to get a job again. I'm 51. But I've just been thinking about, as you're saying, everybody eats, everybody sleeps. And is there one of your cafes in Madison, Wisconsin, which is where I'm near? And if not, how can we get one started?
Well, two things. No, there isn't one right now but you can go on our website, oneworldeveryeats.org or OWEE.org. We have a map of where the cafes are that are opened around the country. And we also have a book that how to start a community cafe, and there's definitely some steps up there, and really starts with, you know, a visionary like yourself, and then gathering a community around yourself that's interested in bringing this to Madison. So you can go on the website and you can get that. And then you're always welcome to email or call me, and we can have a conversation about, you know, taking the next steps.
Are you thinking of starting one, Cindy?
It sounds like a great idea, just because, you know, like I said, I finding myself in this unique position, but it's not like I wasn't compassionate about these things before for a whole bunch of reasons in my life, but I think the whole community idea where people can come and people of all different backgrounds and everything can come and eat in one place, that's so important.
Cindy, do you have any...
don't have a sense of community.
Right.
Cindy, do you have any culinary experience?
Oh, I've been cooking all my life. I've been cooking since I was 7 years old. I mean, I'm not like a gourmet or anything, but I can hold my own.
Right. And so one of the things is there's usually a visionary that they may or may not have experience working in a restaurant. So the easiest way to say is you really need a front of the house and a back of the house to pull this off. I mean, and that's just and you need support for all of that. So,
well, there are a lot of resources at the Madison Technical College. So,
yes.
Oh, yes. Yes, it's all very doable. So, I hope we'll be in touch in the future.
I look forward to getting in touch with you. Thank you.
Yeah, go to it. Let us know when it becomes real, and we'll tell people about it. Cindy, thanks for the call. We go to Don in Eau Claire next. Hi, Don.
Hi, I'm a 94-year-old retired physician, and I have, of course, over the years, had a decided interest in public health. But I also know that in any competitive business, there's people who are less altruistic in their attitudes and the like, who might stick the public health on you or something. Whether it's motivated by envy or by whatever. Have you had any problem over the years with your operations being, what I would say, frankly, unfairly singled out to be inspected or anything of that sort?
To be inspected. Well, I think I'm understanding what you're saying, Don. All the cafes go through like a health department because we do serve food to the public. So they're professional kitchens and everything. And maybe through the years, I remember Rush Limbaugh, doing like a little slam on the cafe, but then he, took it back, which is very unusual. So there's always going to be something out there. There's always, I think when you open your doors and you put your net out there, you catch a bunch of different kinds of fish. So there are going to be people that maybe take advantage of the pay what you can concept, but that's where they're at. There does have to be a balance. And most cafes now in this current economy, usually started around 2008, need to do additional fundraising for like upgrades or things like that. So the cafes that used to be totally sustainable are having to do a little extra fundraising. Does that answer your question?
Sure. Thank you much.
Thanks, Don. Mm-hmm. Thanks very much for the call. Going strong at 94. That's amazing. You've also done some work. Tell me more about this with the John Bon Jovi Soul Foundation and also with mm-hmm. Panera Bread. How are those models applicable?
Well, both Ron Shaich and his wife and John Bon Jovi and his wife Dorothea were watching TV. I believe it was the same show, and they saw an example of the community cafe model, and they were like, aha, we want to do this. They felt that seed in their heart, and both reached out to our organization, and we mentored them to open what they have today. Panera Bread, their concept was, we're going to take a Panera, we're going to open it as what we call a Panera Cares. Mm. So everything is the same, but people can price their own.
Mm-hmm.
John Bon Jovi with the Soul Kitchen in New Jersey, and they also have a second restaurant that they partnered with in Toms River, is more of a sit-down restaurant, and they place a bill, and patrons are allowed to pay. I think they call it, they suggest like a pay it forward. They have a suggested donation of $10 to $20 depending on the location.
Mm-hmm. Have you thought about expanding this? And I'm wondering what the problem areas might be to, in addition to having community restaurants, but also moving the model into more commercial establishments, because there is a lot of food that's wasted at any number of restaurants at the end of a day. Is that feasible or not?
Well, Kathleen, I think there's so many ideas out there, and I think it would be, everything is possibly feasible. I think with these models, cooking the food, when you come in, you're usually in an open kitchen, and I think getting already cooked food from other restaurants might be not where this model wants to go.
Right.
But I think gleaning food from other restaurants is definitely an important idea, and I wish there was more success at that.
Yeah. And one more. I'm sorry.
Okay. Well, I just think a lot of restaurants, it may be a bother, I mean, with their labor, but I think a lot of them are afraid to do it because they think if the food isn't kept really hot or cold and then somebody gets sick, that might come back
right.
on them.
Right.
There's just a lot of concerns there about mm-hmm. the handling of the food.
Mm. And one more question for you. Jay from Wisconsin Dells asks, to reduce food waste, do the restaurants take food donations from individuals, from supermarkets? How about home canned food?
Sure. Most of the community cafes, use fresh produce, and they actually buy their produce from wholesalers or local farmers and then prepare it. Sometimes there's donations of food, like in the high season, somebody has an apricot tree or something extra in their garden. And depending on their growing procedures, that all has to, you know, fall under the health department. But they're right. able to use that food. I would say it's up to the individual cafe. Mm-hmm. If somebody might not want to use canned food, but they might want to use, like, canned garbanzo beans or something. It's all individual.
Mm-hmm. Well, what an idea you had back in 2003. Thank you, Denise, very much. We're just going to talk with somebody who recently opened a place here in Milwaukee. So,
yes, Christy. Well, tell her I said hi. She was just at our summit in Philadelphia.
Oh, yes.
She is the bomb. I love her. And she's very energetic and just loving and everything. So I wish her every success. I know she'll have it.
Yeah, I think she heard that too, so that was great. She's the bomb. Should I introduce her that way? And now the bomb.
Here comes the bomb.
Thank you. Thanks,
thank
Denise.
You for having me on.
Yeah, thank you. Denise Sarita, founder of One World Everybody Eats, Reverend Christy Melby Gibbons, executive director of the recently opened Trickle Bee Cafe in the Washington Heights neighborhood here in Milwaukee, will join us in a moment here on the Ideas Network. We're talking about these wonderful cafes that have opened in various places, and there is one now in Milwaukee, which opened on the Wednesday before Thanksgiving. The visionary behind this one is Reverend Christy Melby Gibbons. She's a Moravian pastor and lives in the Sherman Park area of Wisconsin. This is in the Washington Heights, close to Sherman Park, part of Milwaukee. She's the executive director of the Trickle Bee Cafe, and we're here to talk about how she got this started and why she got this started, and to welcome phone calls for her as well at 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655, email talk at WPR.org. Christy, thank you very much for being with us. Hello.
Hello. Thank
Hi.
You.
Yeah. So you came here from somewhere else, didn't you?
Yes, I'm originally from Iowa, but we moved here from Los Angeles. We were in a suburb there for 6 years and came back to the Midwest where we're from.
And did you have one of those epiphany moments that Denise was describing, that one day you thought about, maybe I should do this One World Cafe kind of idea?
Yeah, it was more of a gradual epiphany, if there is such a thing.
Sure there
we
is.
We had started a food ministry where we were rescuing food that was about to go bad at grocery stores and preparing these kind of gourmet meals in a church fellowship hall. We'd open our door and say anyone can come and eat, and we had dozens of neighbors every week who would come. And it was one of the most beautiful parts of our ministry there for those 6 years. And after, you know, a couple of years in, there was so much life around that table and so much love experienced. And we were watching food go from almost being in a dumpster to being presented on a table in a beautiful way. And we thought, I wonder if we can take this to a higher level, like a more official level. And we discovered the One World Everybody Eats Network.
Mm-hmm. So you moved here and you were looking for some place to do this.
Yes. So we did feel kind of called to do this in an urban context. So we looked at a few cities in the Midwest, and for various reasons, Milwaukee just kind of called to us, and we felt like this is where we are to locate ourselves. So we did some demographic studies of the neighborhoods, and we intentionally located ourselves in an area where the poverty is more obvious and where about a third of the neighbors are unemployed, and all that that leads to in the neighborhood. There's a lot of rundown homes and businesses that are boarded up. So we plopped ourselves down right in the middle of that and said, this is exactly the place that needs a warm cafe with wonderful food.
A third of the people are unemployed. That's mm-hmm. a huge number in the neighborhood, isn't it?
Yeah, it's terrible. And almost 40% of our neighbors within about a mile radius live below the poverty level.
So you need a different kind of model. I would imagine a lot of people then who come to the cafe just don't have very much money and probably just don't have very much food as well.
Right.
But you've also got a pretty segregated community here in Milwaukee, so you need people who will come and pay fair price. You also probably need some people who will make donations or will pay more than what the suggested price is. How do you do that?
Right. Well, we're 3 months in, so we're just really starting to see kind of the patterns of our cafe sales. And what we're finding is almost 90% of our customers are paying kind of that suggested fair price and above.
90? Wow.
Yeah. And so people will drop in, you know, two or three times as much as what we're asking them to pay or hoping they'll pay, and it's covering other people. And even the folks who don't have a lot of money, I think there's dignity in the putting of something into the bucket. I think people like to hear their coins fall or, you know, feel that they have contributed and earned their meal.
Mm-hmm.
So we rarely have people who can pay nothing.
Mm.
Maybe 1 or 2% of our customers can't pay a thing, and they often will help bus tables or serve the food in exchange for their meal. Mm.
Do you ask everybody to do that, to help in some way?
If they're open to, we've got flyers out that say what our shifts are, so they don't have to do it on the spot. They can come back to it at a better time for their schedule to do that.
And I think you were looking at the place you chose because there might be a garden next door?
Yeah.
Right adjacent?
I hope the city people are listening today because there's a city-owned lot right next to our space, and we have used it unofficially in the summer. Just on warm days, we'll do small gatherings out there. But I would love to see that become an outdoor hub, maybe even a little farmer's market in the summertime, a stage area for some music and presentations on healthy eating and gardening, just a hub in the neighborhood, which needs one.
Yeah. Well, you just call the mayor and say,
yeah.
That's all you have to do. This is what we're doing, and I think you should agree to this.
Yeah.
And they'll say yes, probably.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hopefully. So how did you pick the place? Was it a vacant building?
Yeah, there are lots of them to choose from in our area. We live there near Sherman and North Avenue, and we walked up and down North Avenue for about 8 months and got into all these empty storefronts that are very run down and just looked around and tried to imagine what would a cafe look like in each of these spaces. And I wasn't happy with a few of them, or they were so dilapidated that it was hard to imagine making them better. And the one that we got actually was quite disgusting inside when we got it, but I could tell there was something about it. It had a good amount of light coming in the windows. It just had a nice feel. It's right near a bus stop, so there's lots of foot traffic. And I thought, I think this is the one. And as we started to gut it out and add color and expose the beautiful tile floor from the 1930s, people were in awe and were asking, who did your work? I said, well, it was 90 volunteers over the span of a year, and it looks great.
90 volunteers got it spruced up.
Yeah.
Wow.
They put in over 700 hours of work.
Isn't that remarkable?
Yeah.
And are you using the same concept of rescuing food that would be thrown out, or is there a different model?
Yeah, so we are a certified licensed kitchen, so we can't use that food and then serve it and sell it as a plated meal. But we sometimes will have people bring us, like local farmers, when they grade their beds after a season, they'll bring us all the kind of ugly vegetables. So we do get a lot of produce coming in that maybe doesn't look good enough to sell at a market, but we can make it into soups and salads, and it tastes great. So that's one way. And then one of our board members also has connections to the waste streams of some of the big box stores, and she'll get cases of organic jam and juice and fruit that's not expired. So yeah, it comes in. We say it trickles in.
Yeah, that's it. And the name, you must tell us how you got the name.
Yeah, I credit my mom with this one. She often will say, if we're about to do a project or an endeavor, yes, let's do it, but the trick will be if we can get enough money or enough people. So, yeah, the trick will be sustaining
name.
A cafe without donations coming in all the time.
So did you feel overwhelmed at all, thinking that, oh my gosh, I'm kind of responsible? I mean, other people are involved, but this was my idea. Of running a cafe, I wouldn't know how to begin to do that.
Right. There are days, especially earlier on, when I was almost completely overwhelmed because this is not my training at all. I'm ordained in the Moravian Church, so I have a theological degree. I'm an artist. So what am I doing? I've never taken a culinary class in my life. but I understand what hospitality looks like and what it feels like and how beautiful it is to watch people gather around a table. All different demographics and backgrounds, and we all eat and we all hunger for good food and good community. And so I figure that's my gifting, and you don't have to be a chef, a certified chef, to do that. You just have to have the passion for it, and then the chefs show up.
Yeah. So. There is something wonderful about hospitality, isn't there?
Mm-hmm.
It's just such an important thing, and an important thing for all of us to engage in every day, yeah. Really, if we can.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've heard it said of hospitality, it means welcome on your terms, not on our terms. So we feel like that's what we do every day. We open the door, and people just come as they are.
So who are the people who are coming in when you open that door?
Yeah, when we first opened, we had a flurry of kind of interested people coming from a little farther away because the concept was so kind of unique to a lot of people. But it really has settled down into being a neighborhood cafe. We are definitely rooted in our Sherman Park neighborhood. So a lot of, maybe 75% of the people who come and eat are from within a 4-block radius. And then we have people from local organizations and businesses coming in on their lunch breaks or for meetings with coworkers. And mm-hmm. It's a mix.
Hmm. Yeah. And you serve, one of the other ideas in this whole concept is to serve food that's very healthy. Do you adhere to that? And if so, what does that mean?
Yes, we are pretty strict about that. We have even turned away a few donations of things that were very saturated in high fructose corn syrups and, you know, fluorescent frosting and some things we just said, that's kind of you, but it's just not what we're wanting to serve. Because a lot of our neighbors struggle with diabetes and heart-related problems and obesity. So we have intentionally said no on most preservatives. All of our food is prepared fresh every day for the most part. We chop the vegetables that morning. We prep the soups. We make our own breads with local kind of ancient grains as much as possible. So everything, even down to our coffee, is kind of sustainable and healthy for people to enjoy.
Mm. And how's it going? It hasn't been long. You haven't been open long, day before Thanksgiving, but do you think it's successful so far?
Totally. We're not even 3 months in, and we're finding that, I would even say that we're thriving.
Really?
We're not just making it.
Wow.
There's so much life, and somehow the money is just showing up. I open our mail almost on a daily basis and find 2 or 3 checks from people all over the country that are just saying, this is beautiful, we love it, here, hope this buys a few meals for people. So even that way, the money is trickling in for us.
Yeah, so you did the right thing.
Yeah, I totally think we are in the right spot at the right time.
Yeah, and tell me about the ministry, Moravians.
Yes, Moravians are kind of, I guess you could say we're the oldest remaining Protestant denomination. About 100 years before the Lutherans came onto the scene, the Moravians were doing some of the same things the Lutherans became known for. But if Moravians are known throughout the country, it's because of our history of our sense of mission work. It was never about gaining converts to the faith. I mean, that often happened, but it was more about establishing our roots in a community and making sure that people were educated and fed and clothed. So that we often opened hospitals, schools, and this still is kind of the case around the world. If you look it up, that's what we're known for, that kind of work.
We're going to welcome phone calls for you.
Great.
And here's how you reach our conversation. Reverend Christy Melby Gibbons is the director of the recently opened Trickle Bee Cafe. It's kind of on the edge of Washington Heights and also Sherman Park,
yes,
right?
The Uptown Crossing area.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And they just opened the day before Thanksgiving, and it's doing splendidly, she said. Absolutely splendidly. This is a whole concept we've been talking about all hour long. It's a way to create community. It's a way to make sure that everybody can eat food that is healthy, that is nutritious. In today's America, 1 in 6 people food insecure, and that's 50 million people who don't have enough to eat. And so this is one way to give community and affordable food, fresh food, good food, to people in communities that may have very high unemployment, may have a lot of poverty. And there are over 60 of these special cafes all over the country now. We spoke with the founder and this part of the show with the director of the recently opened Trickle Bee Cafe in Washington Heights. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook is The Kathleen Dunn Show. And this is the Ideas Network. Okay, let's go to a message here first. Barry on Facebook has this comment for you. Thanks for bringing this to my attention. Far northeastern Wisconsin desperately needs a concept like this. Is it a harder thing to do in an area that's not a big city?
I have not had experience doing this outside of an urban context, but I think what we've found works is just gathering people together who can see the vision, and then stuff works out because you find that you have people that are contractors, which you need. You know, you need people to pull permits to get the work done.
Right.
You need people to paint the walls. You need people to cook the food. So if you get a good network of people together, you can do this anywhere.
Hmm. And what do you do for that initial outlay of money? Because you did need, what if you need electricity work done in the building or plumbing or whatever?
So, like I said earlier, we had most of our work done by volunteers until we got to a point where we needed to pull some permits. But we wrote for grants. We went around to different organizations and gave presentations, and they did special offerings for us, you know, collected little bits of money here and there, and it all added up to what we needed.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Let's go to Stella in Sturgeon Bay. Hi, Stella.
Hi.
Hi.
I was just wondering if your guest has gotten connected up with Will Allen of Growing Power.
He recently friend requested me on Facebook, but we have yet to officially be a part of their CSA program. We hope to buy vegetables through them this summer. And possibly do some workshops where they're presenting on, better nutritional habits on a low budget.
I thought of him particularly when you mentioned the vacant lot next door to you.
Mm-hmm.
That he might be very helpful. He might be able to be very helpful about getting something very lively going there.
Yeah, he's such an inspiration. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks.
Thanks, Stella. Thank you. And there are some, as you well know, the community gardens that have done very well in Milwaukee. You're using some of the produce from those as well, aren't you?
Yes, we have a plot at Alice's Garden, a 16 by 16 foot plot, which produces a whole heap of vegetables if you tend it well. We also have a plot across the street from our cafe at the Uptown Crossing Neighborhood Community Garden. They have, I think, 8 plots in there, and we've got one of those, so you can't get much more local than about 20 yards away.
Right. So you need gardeners. Those are volunteers as well.
Yes. Uh-huh. Yep. Or gardeners who have, you know, produce growing in their yard who want to donate a box every once in a while, too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. Unless you had something else, Stella. Oh. Let's go to John in Mequon. Hi, John.
Hi. Hi, Christy. I think I talked to David, but I do the booking for the coffee house, and I don't know if you guys realize, but that Christy and David are also musicians.
No, I didn't know
and
that.
And they're going to be playing at the coffee house on March 25th.
Oh. All right. Thanks for the call. What do you play?
I sing and play random percussion, and my spouse plays the guitar and sings as well.
Nice.
We call ourselves a band because it's two of us. But
and what kinds of compositions?
Kind of folksy, sometimes ethereal music. Most people enjoy it. Our voices blend really well together.
Nice.
Yeah.
You're a woman of many talents.
Yes.
John, thanks very much for the call. And Joan from Milwaukee writes that she's delighted that you are here and will be visiting soon.
great.
How's the food? What do you serve?
Oh, we have such good food. We often have, I should say we almost always have, a large pot of soup. And because we don't know what food will be coming in each week, it changes every single day. We have yet to serve the same thing, which some people are frustrated by because they really loved something they had a couple weeks ago, and then we don't have it that one day. But every day there's something on the menu people will like. So a soup, a salad, a sandwich is kind of the standard fare. And then we have a slew of baked goods, coffee, and tea. And sometimes other side salads show up if we have enough food.
And you're open how many days a week?
Right now it's just 4 days a week, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday for lunch, 11 to 2. And then Thursday nights we host more of a community family-style meal where we all eat together.
Oh, nice.
It is.
Very nice. We go to Jay in Madison. Hi, Jay.
Hi, Christy. I was just looking at your website, and we're going to stop there the next time we're in Milwaukee.
Awesome.
But I have a question for you that I've been wondering about while I've heard this whole discussion going on. You don't really know what food you're going to have, so how do you go about doing meal planning? You know, you're not like a regular restaurant where you have the same inventory all the time.
Right. So,
you kind of just have to prepare a menu as you go, I suppose.
We do, and if you carefully watch our website, you'll see that we don't post the menu until about 15 minutes before we open, because sometimes we're still winging it at that hour. But there's a lot of care that goes into it. Our chefs come in early. They know the day before kind of what came in, so they're plotting that night before. And then when they come in, we get all of our volunteers going on different tasks, and it comes together every day. So, and we have yet to disappoint one of our customers. We have all 5-star reviews for our food. And
do you?
Yeah,
oh, my gosh.
It's awesome.
I guess it is.
Yeah.
It sounds great. Jay, anything else?
Well, that's fabulous. I'm looking forward to visiting. We might make it there on Thursday.
Sounds
so if we do,
good.
I will look you up.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks very much for the call. Well, you have to have really good chefs, too. I could never make soup out of nothing. I'd have a hard time making any soup. But where do you get your chefs?
Yeah, we've hired 2 chefs from the neighborhood. Actually, both of them are within about a mile of the cafe. One of them had her ServeSafe certification, and the other one we all went and got it together. So we're all officially certified to be safe kitchen operators. And one of the job description details that I had intentionally built in was that you have to be comfortable with making food with whatever we have. and not even just comfortable with it, but excited at the prospect of doing that every day. Kind of, you know, you get a rush out of like, okay, we got a whole bunch of rutabagas and beets today. What can we do with that? And they love it. They just come alive. You can see it. It's like art, watching them
It is like art. It is art.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't it?
It is.
And the food comes from where? So today you get rutabagas and beets, and they come from?
Local farms. We had Full Harvest Farm up near Hartford brought us 4 huge boxes of vegetables that they had grated up from their beds at the end of the season, and they were just in the root cellar, and they said, we can't use these. And we said, we'll take them, you know. So we never know. And they're always unsolicited. We have yet to officially partner with any farms in that way. I mean, we buy some CSAs to keep us going, but a lot of the unsolicited stuff just shows up.
You're kidding me. It just shows
up.
It's just word of mouth of people telling people, and this is...
Yeah.
Isn't that remarkable?
Mm-hmm.
Are you a good cook? Were you a good cook before you started all of this?
I can make the food look really wonderful on the table. I am not the one who cooks in our home. I cook when I have to because I know if we don't, we'll die. So I am, you know, I can make the food at home. But I think for me, it's more of the setting of the table, the creating of the space and the atmosphere.
The hospitality.
Yes, the hospitality.
Yeah, absolutely.
So.
Yeah. So do you have, I would imagine there are some people who come in, you want people to be able to converse with each other too. Mm-hmm. Do you do something to bring people together within the cafe?
Sometimes it's more intentional. At our Thursday evening meals, it's very intentional. But in the daytime, part of what it is, we have 2 very large tables. So if somebody comes in on their own or maybe in a small group and some of the small tables are full, they have to sit at the big table and maybe rub elbows with some people they didn't come with. And what we find is people often start talking. We see people exchanging business cards and laughing. And I don't know of really many other restaurants where you would feel comfortable doing that, but people all the time, almost on a daily basis, are interacting on
that
level.
That's great. That's the way it should be. Thank you so much for being with us. What's the website again?
So we are Trickleby Cafe at Oops, I'm giving you the email address. TricklebyCafe.org is our website.
Great. Yep,
and we're on Facebook as well.
You're on Facebook, and the mm-hmm. address is?
It's just Trickleby Cafe on
No, the Facebook. Street address.
Oh, sorry. 4424 West North Avenue.
4424 yep. West North Avenue. Thank you. Thanks, mm-hmm. Christy, so much.
Yes, thanks.
Reverend Christy Melby Gibbons, director of the recently opened Trickleby Cafe in Washington Heights. Well, that was an interesting hour, wasn't it? Thanks to Natalie Guyette for producing this hour, and thanks to everybody for all of your phone calls, and thanks to Colleen Duvall for on-air production here in our studios in Milwaukee. We're with you again tomorrow. News is coming up momentarily from National Public Radio, and tomorrow we're with you at 1 o'clock with our show about Abraham Lincoln. Thanks for listening.